The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Top of the morning to you. The weekend edition is here. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Heading, ESPN FM 101.5, 1480 AM, and of course the ESPN Lincoln app. Good morning. College football is almost here, and you want to join us this morning. Plenty of Nebraska thoughts to get into. A lot of news and notes this week. Can tap the line with Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. If you're bumping around on your way to get some coffee, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. And on Twitter, at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Mark Skurs, and of course at TJ underscore Henning. Mr. Kranak, have you melted yet? Been a warm week. How you doing?
Dude. It's ridiculous. Welcome back, by the way. It seems like it's been a while since we've, done a show together.
Last Saturday we were in Kansas City. Was I on 2 weeks ago? It's a blur.
See, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. We did conclude that last on the last show that during the summer you sneakily you take a lot of time off.
Really?
You're just.
I can count on one hand, like, the breather days.
No, you just kind of take a lot of vacation. You're sort of like, hey, it's the summer.
Let's be straight. How many weeks a year do we do the weekend edition? 50?
I mean.
Usually it's Christmas and 4th of July.
So
DJ's shaking his head adamantly, yes, it's 50 freaking weeks a year.
Well, yeah, we skip 4th of July, we skip Christmas.
And then you might mix in maybe 3 to 4 shows that I might not be on.
But they usually come together in lumps, and they're usually in summer.
I'd say my batting average is 44 to 45 weeks out of the year.
We had fun with it last week, though.
Where's Schmidt passed out today? It's confined, where's Waldo?
We surmised that you were passed out face down in a Shoney's in Kansas City. But I'm not sure that Shoney's even is around anymore. And TJ had never heard of Shoney's.
Of course not.
And I don't even know if Shoney's is still a thing.
No, I don't know. We had enough ribs Friday night to do it upright. And then it was with the wife and child. So there's no excess for me.
Oh, sure.
Maybe for them.
Yeah, well, that's part of the thing. This is like part of the denial thing. It's like those 8 drinks are considered excessive by them when it's before 10 a.m.
The volume of the snore as we go to bed. Mark, let's get into some Nebraska football. Here's what we got coming up in 15 minutes. Dick Vermeil, legendary coach for the Rams, Eagles, Chiefs.
He's such a negative jerk. He's like the most positive guy in the world.
Yeah. Dick Vermeil is going to be part of the Nebraska Coaches Association. He is speaking, I believe, Tuesday in Lincoln. And we caught up with him on Thursday. Had some thoughts on a couple of Huskers he coached. Grant Wistrom, Lawrence Phillips. Thoughts on Coach Riley. And just coaching philosophy is going to kind of be his keynote point when he speaks to coaches this coming week. So I'll rewind with Dick Vermeil. On a side note, we were lucky enough to get a pretty massive O.J. Simpson interview with Mike Gilbert yesterday. If you missed that, it's posted on HailVarsity.com. I think the world is OJ'd out, which I get, but...
Oh, jeez. I haven't been following any of this crap. Okay. I serious, none of it.
That's fine.
It's just like, don't you kind of already know everything you need to know about OJ? Like, it's just like...
No, you know it, but then it plays out in front of you again about just the dude's ego. In Hour 2, Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com will join us to kick off Hour 2. Greg Smith of HailVarsity, a recruiting guy. Greg is awesome. He will join us this morning. The Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, is on a bit of a sabbatical. Dude deserves that greatly, so we will catch up with him in future dates.
He absolutely deserves that, but can we call him the Iron Horse anymore?
Sure, we can.
You know what I'm saying? The Iron Horse, a reference to Lou Gehrig, who never missed a game.
Right. And I would say, as you blasted me for my attendance record on the weekend edition, I would say Sharpie's attendance has been better than mine.
Sharpie is great. But I just don't know if we can attach the Iron Horse to him anymore.
How many years have you been doing this with us? We've been doing this show like 8-9 years.
But the Iron Horse is specific.
He's been on for 8 of the 9 years. He has earned the Iron Horse name.
He's the man. Gary's awesome. And like, our show is worse because he is not there. It, all deference to Gary. This is not, but that particular term, Iron Horse, is a Lou Gehrig never miss a game reference.
It is.
I don't know if we can in good conscience call him that anymore. Maybe we have to call him like the Steel Horse.
When I hear Steel Horse I Ride, I'm thinking Bon Jovi, Dead or Alive.
And then we can start playing Bon Jovi. So when he comes back, he'll just be totally confused about that.
I think 8:30 in the morning is too early for any Bon Jovi music. I want to talk Nebraska football for a second. And listen, you had the Cleveland.com poll come out. You've had the anonymous comments by coaches from Athlon in their preview. And you sent me this text as we were pre-show meeting, and let's talk about the question here. Are we too rosy with our predictions for Nebraska football? Think about yourself. You're 40-some days away from 2017 getting here. Big Ten Media Days gets rocking Monday and Tuesday in Chi-Town, and then poof, the end of next week, camp starts a week from today. It gets rolling. So between now and then, you'll come up with what your acceptable record will be for Nebraska football. And with a lot of the question marks, as strong as the Big Ten has been, as good as Wisconsin's been, are we too rosy and too positive about what Nebraska can be this year? And I'm going to just lay it out there. My number right now, and this is in pencil, I think by the time we kick off here in September, it'll be in ink. But right now, I am floating, and it's blind faith that it'll be okay. I'm floating towards that 8 or 9 win regular season. A lot of places say 5-7, 6-6, 7-5, ceiling being 8-4. And I don't have proof to back up 8 or 9 wins right now. I have what I think translates into that 8 or 9 win number, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's, all right, let's rinse repeat here. It's quarterback and fit. It's energy and excitement. And then you have some guys that if they hit their potential, then that's your formula. And when I talk about guys, I'm talking about, okay, you got a guy like Weber in the middle. You got a guy like Kalu. Both guys, seniors. Kalu is shifted for now. And then you got Weber that's kind of been waiting for this moment, a Nebraska kid. Mm-hmm. I look at Perella on the defensive line, and I look at the bodies he has there. I don't know who's playing the other outside backer spot. That's very key in this defense.
See, I know.
Right? I mean, you can have an objection to every positive thought. And offensively, how's your right tackle going to be? How's your run game going to be? Are your skill guys going to step up and deliver? Your tight end's going to be that mismatch you want against a linebacker or safety in this offense? I have no doubt Tanner Lee will make the right read and the right throw. Is he going to have time to do it? And are you going to be balanced enough offensively where it isn't the 96 Fiesta Bowl where Florida's having to throw every down because they can't run it? So there are objections to the positive thought of best case scenario. But what I like most about this team is kind of the demeanor of their leaders. Tanner Lee. Pretty calm, pretty chill. He's come in, he's worked, he's earned his teammates' respect. They want to play for him. I think defensively, Mark, this group of dudes needed the change. They needed some energy. Mm-hmm. They needed some excitement. They have that with Diaco. While a scheme shift isn't ideal and it takes a while, it's been done by midseason or a little later that a team kind of hits their stride. Yep. And then you do have some athletes and you can get the best guys on the field. The point you made via text, and I'm going to let you speak now, I'll quit filibustering, is the Chris Jones factor. And he could surprise us all by, you know, he has declared that he'll be back. And God love him. And if he is back and he's healthy and he's good, then that is a positive and a bonus. You have the athletes. You just don't have the experience. And can it all come together? So are you too rosy with your best case scenario for Nebraska football in 2017 as the season's just around the corner?
Look, and right off the Chris Jones thing. I mean, you know, Godspeed to him. Hope it works out. The chances of him coming back and being in game shape and being a difference maker this year, super low. And the thing that Chris Jones had that I don't think anybody else had on the team, there's few examples of this. Mm-hmm. And this is why I'm probably most concerned. Jones was as close to an all-conference type player that Nebraska has, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Like, agreed?
Absolutely.
And if you think of that as the bar of just like a proven high level player, not potential, proven. He's played at a high level. He has all conference potential, right? He's put it on tape. He's one of the few guys on the roster that you can say that about. And that's what makes this year. I mean, think about that for a second. You mentioned Chris Weber. I love it, too. I loved that stretch that he played in 2015. I thought he should have played more last year. But let's be real.
It's a snapshot. It's a snapshot. It's not a full season.
Yeah. No, you could not say that Chris Weber is a proven high-level performer right now. Chances are he will be. But you can't say that, right? Like, if you look at what he actually contributed last year, you can't say that. Mick Stoltenberg coming back. Would you say he was a high-level performer?
He's getting his feet wet last year.
Freedom Akinmolodun, high-level performer? All-conference potential? No. Carlos Davis? Khalil Davis? No. Josh Kalu, I would say, he's flirting with that, mm-hmm. right? He's flirting with that.
He's proven.
Yeah, he's proven. He's probably the next closest thing. But everybody else, I mean, do you think for as much as Aaron Williams gets lauded as the guy mm-hmm. that they're going to entrust and hand the keys to on the defense at safety, would you say he's been flirting with all-conference? No.
He's had flashes of all-conference ability, and then being a sophomore a year ago, he took some lumps against teams that ended up in the playoff.
But no one outside of Lincoln is fearing Aaron Williams, right? Like, he's just not at that level yet. He could be. But he's not. And then you go to the offensive side of the ball. Kind of the same thing. Who is a proven player? You got Stanley Morgan. Stanley is a proven high-level player flirting with all-conference potential.
I'm going to throw Gates in there. And before you slap me, I think his first 2 years here starting, one at left, one at right, have been pretty good with the exception of one game.
Yeah, so you're probably right. It probably colors it.
I don't think you throw out the water because of going up against a top 15 pick.
That's fair. But so you're talking about maybe three guys on the team that are proven, have done it on the field, and are flirting with all conference potential that we know of.
Where do you slot
into the year? Those are the only three.
Two more for you.
And one of them's gone.
Mr. Brown with field goals, special teams. And then also
kickers are people too. All right.
And then I'm going to ask you about Pearsonell.
You
didn't see enough of him as a freshman to say, okay, if he's back and healthy, he hasn't proven it for you.
look, you have to go
as
back
a return guy. I think he has as a receiver. He's had great flashes.
You have to go back pretty far.
Yeah, but
for that,
okay.
Look,
but
he, very very pedestrian sophomore year, very pedestrian junior year. Period. One good return against Oregon, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just being real about it.
I'm not blasting you for your opinion on that. I'm just saying when people have actually got him the ball, he has been a game changer.
Okay. But again, is he on anybody's radar? No. He's not, you know,
I would say he's on the radar, but he's far off on the radar.
We know. We've seen him. We know what he's capable of. But he hasn't really put it into play the last 2 years. It's just reality, right? Like, name the last great Pearsonell play. It's kind of hard
Oregon,
to come up with it.
The Oregon game.
Right? Yep.
The Oregon
yep.
game and then the slant route for six against Maryland.
Okay. So, cool. A guy that had a big punt return and scored a touchdown. Like, there's dozens of those kind of guys throughout the league, right?
But are there dozens of those type of guys on this team? We're picking up guys on this team, right?
Yeah. So I think there's the overall point. Mm-hmm. It's like you
can. The point is you can count the few.
Yeah. Oh man. Now, so what we're doing is we're banking on that year-to-year improvement. So I think one thing that a lot of people are missing on the positive side is offensive line. You are finally going to have a collection of dudes that are experienced upperclassmen, which pretty much since football began is your recipe to having a good offensive line. You don't throw in a bunch of true freshmen. You don't throw in like a bunch of true sophomores. You throw in dudes that have been on campus 3 to 4 years, that have full beards,
got a minivan,
eating at that training table for 4 years, that have, you know, fought the big Swedes in the trenches from Michigan and Minnesota and wherever else, that are just battle hardened. And I think you have an offensive line that is that, and I don't think anybody's given that credit. And the other thing that is kind of surprising to me is people are really selling the running backs short. Now,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
The running game is a major question mark, A, because of the offense that exists now, where it's not been a priority unless you've had an NFL back, and two, the inconsistency, how the year finished. I mean, it's not been consistent. It's not been reliable. And that's troubling. And can it all of a sudden be consistent and reliable? And as much as people doubted Newby, that dude ran hard. And in some of those in some of those coin flip wins that you expect Nebraska to win, well, easier said than done. And you think of Newby against Illinois. You think Newby against Indiana. You think Newby against and the start Nebraska got against Northwestern. You think Newby against Minnesota. I mean, you got that security blanket anymore. You have talent. You have some ability there at IBAC. But again, have they done it? And it's been more in spot duty or a few select plays.
Yeah,
it's not been 25 carries.
No, right. Now, that's the thing, is we're going into this year, we are having to take a leap of faith because for the most part, go down the position groups, they haven't proven they can do it at a high level. For the most part. Might have some experience, but they were just kind of dudes. They weren't game changers. They haven't put in all conference type performances yet. So you're banking on that happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at running back, I'm probably least concerned. Look, they shut Trey Bryant down during the spring because they figured they were pretty much like, yeah, he's great. Like, we haven't all seen it, but the coaches were like, yeah, shut him down. Like, the guy got pretty much no reps in the spring game. He got held out in a lot of practices because they just want to keep him fresh because they're convinced that he's fine. And then we've all seen Wilbon, and we know that Wilbon's capable. And then Zigbo moves the chains. Like, I'm not concerned about running back. I don't understand why that's a huge deal. I am concerned about receiver because, yes, now you have Tanner Lee, who according to all the pundits, all the experts, the guy can just throw a beautiful ball and he's super accurate. Okay, cool. But you need receivers to do that. You know Stanley's a proven thing. DeMornay, he could, right? If he's healthy, right? He just hasn't been the same since his injury. And then what? Then you're relying on a bunch of guys that you don't really know about yet.
No,
Spielman, Keon Williams, the Brian Reimers, Gabe Ron.
Right. The narrative shifts if you have last year's receiving core because of their career and extensive playmaking resume teamed up with a guy who can sling it. But again, as is true with Nebraska football the last 20 years, things have not matched up. Got a great defense, don't have a quarterback. Got a good quarterback, you're thin at a receiver group, or you don't have that go-to eye back. You got a good running game and quarterback, okay, is the O-line ready? Defensively, yeah. I mean, you got three future NFL picks on the defensive line. Your secondary's a mess. So yeah, I mean, it's just not matched up. And now you move forward, and when it comes to projections and predictions and being slotted third in the Big Ten West, I mean, as a Nebraska fan, it may hurt, but you can't be that surprised because of what we've just laid out there, the potential versus the reality.
Nebraska's lost the benefit of the doubt with with other coaches and with the nation in general. It's all those years of getting blown out in big games and the way last year ended with just a complete thud. They're now just a team. In the eyes of others, Nebraska is just whatever. Yeah, they got a lot of fans. They got a big budget, a lot of tradition. They're not very good.
We'll get into the anonymous coach that critiqued the Nebraska job this hour, and we'll get into some things that were said about Coach Diaco by said anonymous coaches in the Athlon preview. Brandon Vogel is coming up. Greg Smith, also of Hail Varsity, with recruiting in less than an hour. Cranack, we will continue to debate if the outlook is too rosy, or if you can kind of – do you feel like you're talking yourself into success for the team?
Yeah.
Or are you kind of preparing yourself for – kind of a growing pains year in 2017, where that growing pains will be a 7-5, a 6-6. Or are you like, all right, with the schedule being what it is, can you talk yourself into 8-4, 9-3? And I think you can do the range. You can talk yourself into 6-6, and you can certainly talk yourself into 8-4, 9-3.
Dude, if it's 6-6, and then you hit that 2018 schedule, and you're also a 6-6 or a 7-5 or worse, goodbye entire administration. Hate to say it, but that will not stand.
It's Mark Cranack, Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. It's Hail Varsity Radio, the weekend edition. Dick Vermeil shortly. Sauter Heyman is where you need to be today. The exclusive dealer of Pure Grown Diamonds, Nebraska's exclusive dealer. See Rick and your friends. Ask Rick about some football. He loves Nebraska football. Pure Grown Diamonds, 100% real diamonds, except they're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. What's that mean? Well, they have all the characteristics of earth mined diamonds, but they're very beautiful. And some say as or more so than those earth mine diamonds. They're eco-friendly, are pure-grown diamonds, and they're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mine diamonds. They're some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. That says a lot. And a location for you here in Lincoln, 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion, or if you're traveling west like I am later today, Grand Island, a Sauter Heyman location for you. Can log on, SauterHeyman.com. What's Dick Vermeil think of the Nebraska program, of Coach Riley, of some Huskers he's coached? Well, the coach, the Super Bowl champ from back in 99, will join us. Our rewind up next with Dick Vermeil. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
With Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Cranack.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, and we welcome in legendary coach, a Super Bowl champ, and he's going to be in Nebraska next week to speak. He's the keynote speaker for the Nebraska Coaches Association Dick Vermeil is on with us. Coach Vermeil, thanks for a few minutes. How are you today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Well, yeah. Coach, you're going to be back in Nebraska, and I remember watching you and seeing you all those Oklahoma-Nebraska games for ABC. You'd make your way to Lincoln or Norman. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing in Lincoln specifically, and what your speech will outline to so many coaches.
Well, you know, it's really an honor to come back into Lincoln. I always had such a good time there. You know, I never had to go in there and coach, so I was always able to leave there with a smile on my face in broadcasting, working with Brent Musburger, you know, and I really enjoyed the opportunity to visit with Tom Osborne and his staff, Frank Solich and all those guys. It was really a great period for me and a great period for Nebraska. But I'm coming in to speak at the association, and I'm going to speak on philosophy of coaching. Not so much offense, defense, kicking game, or football, basketball, but just philosophy of coaching and working with kids. And, you know, I got coached for 35 years, broadcast for another 14. So I've been around football all my life, and hopefully I have something to pass on to these people.
When you talk about philosophy, Coach, I reached out to one of your former players specifically to ask about you. And you'll remember Grant Wistrom. And
oh, you bet. Special, special guy. Got a great big picture of him right over my left shoulder.
Do you really? Well, he. Yeah. I don't know if he's got a picture of you, but he loves you. And that type of philosophy. Can you kind of tell us what molded you? Because, I mean, I look at your career, not only as successful as you were working your way up in college and then your 2 years at UCLA, but then you got the jump to the NFL, and you made a lot of lemonade, to be honest with you, with programs and teams you took over. I mean, they got better once you got there. What type of philosophy did you bring with you? What did you want to instill culture-wise in a program or a team?
You know, each level, Chris, that I coached, high school, junior college, college, and pro football, I learned from my players. I learned from my assistants. I learned from the people I broadcast games for. How could you not learn lessons by going in and watching Tom Osborne run a practice and visit with his squad and organize a team and getting ready to play? So, you know, I had a lot of opportunities to grow, and I gradually put together a philosophy of working with people that work for me. Maybe not every personality could do it the way I do it. You have to do it within your own way of thinking and your own makeup. And, you know, I always work guys very, very hard, but I think they'll give you all they have to give you as long as they know you care. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about you gaining a win as a coach. It's about we as a team getting better and helping kids be better on and off the field, you know. And I just sort of adopted that approach, started in high school and carried it with me and tried to add something positive to it each year I coached. You know, I've learned a lot about coaching the last 10 years I've been out of it, just by studying other people, you know, other great writers in leadership and the military and the Navy SEALs and all these other people. You know, how could you not learn if you worked with Tom, you know, John Wooden, my gosh, you know. So anyway, hopefully it'll be an hour well spent.
I think it'll be outstanding. And Dick Vermeil is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. He'll be in Nebraska next week, the Nebraska Coaches Association. He is in Lincoln to speak. Coaching philosophy and common sense principles of coaching is the topic he'll be discussing. Coach, what type of personalities did you want to have on your staff? I mean, that's so important because you got to have different guys to push different buttons.
Well, number one, I wanted people that wanted to work, that didn't need my motivation. I always said, I work very hard to motivate a player, but I'm not going to motivate a coach. That's up to him. If he's not a motivated coach, then he's not on my staff. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the number one thing. And then, you know, with real character, that you had a great work ethic. And, you know, I've heard all these statements about, boy, this guy is brilliant, and oh, how smart he is and all that kind of stuff. That only helps you if you can coach, you know, and I really like to surround myself with people that had strengths in areas that I didn't think I had a strength. And I also like to match the personality of the coach to the position he was coaching. You know, if you're going to coach a quarterback, you coach with a different personality maybe than you do as a defensive line coach or a linebacker coach or a secondary coach or an offensive line coach. So, you know, for the most part, I think I was pretty fortunate, pretty lucky to get the right kind of guys. But, you know, I think a great example of what I want in a player is Grant Wistrom. I watched him play in college, and when I had the opportunity to draft him number one in the draft, and I had full control of the draft, you know, the final decision, I drafted Grant Wistrom. Why? Because I saw what kind of a person he was as he played. You know, I've always said players demonstrate what they are by what they do. Yet when you watch Grant Wistrom play as a Nebraska Husky, or Cornhusker rather, you couldn't help but be impressed with him. And some people would say, well, he's a little undersized. And I said, whatever he lacks in size, he makes up in heart. And, you know, yeah, you can't, I don't know if you can coach that. I know this, he was extremely positive influence on the rest of our football team, especially the old coach.
Coach Vermeil's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. I mean, I look at that year, your second year in St. Louis, Trent Green goes down, Kurt Warner has been grinding to get a shot. His son Cade's a walk-on at Nebraska this year. And then you have Grant, and you have Little, and you have a defense, and then you have all those skill guys, Holt and Isaac Bruce, and then, of course, Marshall. And it came together for an incredible year and an incredible Super Bowl. But it started off with adversity, didn't it, in 1999 for you?
Well, no, it was 97 and 98 were adverse years, but they were building years. Yeah. You know, if you can get better when you're losing, and keep people coming to work and tending to get better every single day, eventually there's going to be a lot of them left over that can help you win. In that organization, there were 9 guys left when we went into our third year that went to the Super Bowl that were under contract when we got there. A lot of guys left. A lot of guys didn't fit. But I started adding people to the roster that fit what I was looking for. You know, in Eric Warfield, you know, I got to coach Eric for 5 years in Kansas City and watched him grow and mature and turn into a pretty darn good player. I watched him play safety in college.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think it's magic. And I've always felt winning wasn't complicated, that coach is complicated. As long as you have good players and treat them right and you're given the time to coach them, you can make them better.
Coach, as we wrap up, I think the path you tried to steer Lawrence Phillips on, similar to Coach Osborne, needs to be recognized, where you guys both did everything in your power to try and get him back on the straight and narrow. And I've seen the documentary that Lars Anderson did and Showtime did on Lawrence, and I've seen your interview on there, and you're just so passionate about not only the player, but just a guy that you're trying to help out. Is it something that bothers you, or have you moved on?
Oh, yeah. You know something? I say this now at 80 years old. If I hadn't been out of coaching, and I'd been coaching all along and hadn't been out for 14 years when I took over the Rams, I would have handled it differently. I would have been more mature. I would have better understood his problems, and I would have given myself and my staff more time to help solve his problems. We had him close. We had him close, you know, but there was some devils inside him there that were really tough for him to shake, but there was a lot of good in there. There was a lot of good, and I just felt if I had it to do over again, you know, I probably wouldn't have let him go when I did, and I would have invested more time and more people in trying to get him to straighten out, not only because he could play, but there was potential there to be a good person.
Dick Vermeil is going to be in Nebraska, part of the Nebraska Coaches Association, the keynote speaker, Common Sense Principles of Coaching. Coach, what do you do now that you're retired? I think you're a busy guy, but what do you enjoy doing?
Well, I really enjoy corporate speaking engagements.
Yeah.
They pay me some money, and I use it to go hunting and fishing and stuff I shouldn't buy. I buy with it, you know. Yeah, I really enjoy it. It gives me a team to coach for an hour. I really enjoy that. I'm in the wine business, Vermeil Wines. You can Google Vermeil Wines, and you'll see. I was born and raised in the Napa Valley.
Yeah.
And I had a hobby of making wine out there with friends. And I had some good friends here that in 2008 wanted to turn my hobby into a business, and I consented. And now we're making about almost 3,000 cases of wine a year, all high-end quality wines. And we have our problems, just like you do in coaching. But our wines are excellent.
Lastly, Coach, your thoughts on Mike Riley in Nebraska? If you, I'm sure you know of Coach Riley. What do you think he can do?
I know him very well. I've known him for a long time. I knew his dad. Okay, I coached against his dad. That's how old I am. When he was at Oregon State, so I know him. I respect him. I remember when he was coaching the San Antonio World League team. So I followed his career. I've been on campus at Oregon State. He was there. I coached against him when he was in San Diego. I like him a lot. He's a great person. He's the kind of guy you would want coaching your 19, 20-year-old son at Nebraska University. I know you got to win ball games. I know he's capable of it. I think it's a little more difficult today than it used to be there at Nebraska to get that done. But I'm pulling for him. I have great admiration for Mike Riley.
Dick Vermeil, Coach, I'd love to chat again sometime. Enjoy your time in Nebraska, and thanks for the message you'll provide the coaches here in Nebraska. Take care, and we'll do this again.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity to say hello.
Now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week. What?!
Big thanks to Dick Vermeil and the Rewind segment, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, ESPN 101.5, 1480 AM, and the ESPN Lincoln app. So, some bad news before a good tweet. Greg Smith is having phone issues. He is frustrated and sad. And the alternative phone will not be available at 8:30. So we'll just have to wait till next week to bother Greg Smith in Chicago.
Yep.
Fair? Okay.
Yeah, fair.
Jared Larkin tweets in. We were talking, are you too rosy about your predictions for Nebraska 2017? Jared makes a fantastic point. Says, we've had limited passing game for so long, we've forgotten what an elite quarterback can mean. If Lee is legit, it may mean 2 to 3 wins. Ding.
True.
Ding, ding. And that's kind of where, if I'm at 8 or 9, my movement, my assumption is he is good all the time. And in some instances can be great. Okay? At quarterback. Defensively, can they be good most of the time, and if they've got an off game, get picked up by a great quarterback performance, flipping it around. When you got that front seven of Ohio State, you know, breathing fire, second week of October here at Memorial Stadium, can the defense rise up and bail out the offense? You know, team game, can special teams hook up some sweet field position? Or hose an opposing offense with their starting field position. So a lot to think about with that. We'll get into some of the adjustments Coach Riley has made. A thought or two here, Kranak, before we say goodbye in hour one. When it comes to the anonymous comments by a coach in the Athlon preview, specifically in reference to Coach Diaco. More of a guru than a coach. His mind games won't work. They don't have the talent. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not quoting directly.
Yeah,
but it's a huge risk with a high reward is how it was termed. And let me ask you this. Hindsight is what it is. Did you want to change defensively? It's what you have. It's what you're moving with. Do you feel better now about what you got and upgraded to? Or do you think you upgraded?
I don't understand the huge risk component. As if he's somehow not a proven defensive coordinator.
You know, right?
What? Like, what do you mean?
What offsets his NFL roster at Notre Dame is how good his defenses were at UConn. And I know UConn wasn't playing the SEC West or Notre Dame schedule. Or a Big Ten schedule.
They also couldn't recruit anybody because they're UConn.
Right.
I mean, exactly.
The South Floridas of the world, and was it the AAC they were in, right? not a, it's a good conference. I mean, you had Houston, you had South Florida, you had Central Florida. You had, I mean, you had some good teams in there.
I would say it's probably one of the least risky hires.
Yeah.
That, you know what I'm saying? Like, what about that is risky? Like, well, I don't know. He's had good defenses every year he's coached. Pretty risky. Like, no, it's not. That is not risky. Put it this way. Compare Mark Banker's resume to Bob Diaco's resume. 99 out of 99 people would select Bob Diaco over Mark Banker. That's not to denigrate Banker. It's not like Banker was terrible.
Top 30 defense last year.
But look, Diaco has had more elite defenses in less time than Banker has had his entire career. Like, it's just, I mean, come on. It's not risky. But that goes to show how Nebraska does not have the benefit of the doubt anymore.
Nope. You're absolutely right.
Outside looking in, Nebraska could look desperate.
Here's the thing. It just takes one season. Because Wisconsin has had some nice seasons. But last year really kind of put them back on the map. Yeah. All it took was a win against LSU. Incredible performances where they just came up short. They didn't get blown out by anybody.
Yeah.
And they go back-to-back Ohio State, Michigan. And they were in that both those games. One was overtime. One was final 2 minutes. So all it took was one season. And frankly, they didn't have the benefit last year. And now everyone's on their wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had...
Well, we're bringing back 17 guys.
Sure.
I'm on that wagon, too.
And their schedule...
Wisconsin's proven.
Yes. But it's been 5 years, but the last 5 years it's been a lot of transition, but they've still kind of just trucked forward.
Yeah, because they have a player culture.
Uh-huh.
And that just insert coach here. You pretty... As a coach, as any of the defensive coaches or offensive coaches or assistants, coordinators, doesn't even matter. Your job is more to be a caretaker than it is to, like, try to get these guys ready to play.
Do it. The recipe's there. Just don't screw it up.
Yeah, basically.
And you know, Barry's watching.
Yeah. Right.
Hour two is just ahead. Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com and Magazine will get his take on the 2017 outlook. Great to have you on a Saturday with Hail Varsity Radio. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Hour two next.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. The weekend edition, Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning. Greg Smith will join us next week. This week, as we kick off Hour 2, it's Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Got an excellent tweet in from D. Verdi. And we'll get to that. He outlines his reasons for optimism when it comes to scoring defense. And Vogues, you've written about this quite a bit when it comes to the application of what is special about Diaco's D. Kranak and I started off things about, you know, are we too rosy with our predictions and expectations for 2017? And I've kind of talked myself into 8-4, maybe 9 wins, but I'm always kind of my beer's always half full kind of guy. And there are a lot of things that you can question because it's not on paper. It's not on film. And let's go there, Vogues, the pulse of the of Husker Nation with Hail Varsity. What's kind of the feedback and vibe you get from the outlook? Are we all wearing red glasses, or have we lost our sunglasses? Because that tends to happen.
No, I think that's... in Nebraska circles, I think somewhere in that 8.5 wins, which is kind of where you're at, seems to be kind of common. I mean, I think the scale internally, I guess, kind of feels fair at that point. You know, it's not like people are coming in and saying, well, Nebraska's going to challenge for the West Division. They'll probably win 10 games, and it's going to be a special season. I don't hear that very often. The scale changes a little bit when you step outside Nebraska, of course. You've seen some predictions as low as 5 or 6 wins. I think 7 is kind of the median there for people who are looking at this program from afar. So some of that you can say, well, you know, fans just want to feel good about their team. Of course, it's going to be a little bit higher, but there's so much unknown with this group in particular that it doesn't feel too out of whack, I guess, that difference that you're probably going to see every year if you really take the time to look at it.
Brandon Bogle with us, Hale Varsity Radio. And you said it, so much unknown. And I think that's the thing, because try to answer this question. Who on Nebraska's roster, and there could be a couple of people, who on Nebraska's roster would you say is a proven high-level player? Like, you've actually seen it happen. Who is a proven high-level, all-conference-type player on Nebraska's roster?
It's tough to come up with one. You know, the immediate answer to that question 2 weeks ago was probably Chris Jones, but even he, you know, he had an honorable mention all-conference, so you sort of, I think for Nebraska fans, we're more excited about what was to come, because if you made honorable mention last year, maybe you're second team or first team this year. Gates is another one who's probably has the pedigree and has shown in spurts the ability to be there, but he wasn't there last year either. So it's just tough. You know, you start to go down and come up with a ranking of the top players in the Big Ten. It's hard to put a Nebraska guy in there right now based on production. You can do it based on potential and what you think they might be, what you think the offense might be for a guy like Tanner Lee. But it is still a projection. And when you have to make your projections based on projections, you just get a lot of noise.
So a quick follow-up on that then. Who jumps to mind as, I guess, being the safest projection to get into that conversation?
Also not an easy one to answer. I'll probably go back to Gates on the offensive side, just as a name that people sort of know. I think Kalu has that potential, and a name that doesn't jump to mind, but I think has a great shot to be there at the end of the year, for me at least, is Aaron Williams. I think he's poised to have a really big season.
Vogues, what's your reaction to the Cleveland.com unofficial preseason projection poll with Nebraska third? And follow-up to that, do you think too many folks are glossing over Michigan? Let's get a Michigan temperature from you as well.
Yeah. As far as it pertains to Nebraska, it was a little bit rosier, I guess, than we'd seen the national consensus so far. I mean, were either of you guys the two that picked Nebraska to win the West?
No, we were not. Well, I'm going to speak for myself. Mark Skurs might be. Kranak, did you vote Nebraska to win the West? Let me just out you right now.
No. Wisconsin until further notice.
Until they run out of cheese. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's very much, well, it could have been the default for the past couple of years in the West, but specifically so this year, just given, you know, you look at Wisconsin or Nebraska and Iowa, both placing quarterbacks, Northwestern has sort of a dream team in terms of returning experience, but everyone kind of tempers that with Northwestern's ceiling a little bit. So, you know, for Nebraska, I thought it was a little bit ahead of maybe where I would have guessed. I wouldn't have, if you asked me to say, would they get any first-place votes, I would have said no. So two people out there, at least, think Nebraska has a chance to surprise a little bit. For Michigan, it's just hard with so much they have to replace. You know, in some ways, they're like Nebraska, but at a higher level based on what they've done under 2 years of Harbaugh. You're basing your projection for the team on a lot of individual projections because of how much they lost. That said, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the pecking order right now is Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan. We get to the end of the year, I would not be shocked to see Michigan in that number two spot, depending on who was number one, and playing in the last weekend for a chance to kind of win the East in a year that everyone would then assume was a little bit ahead of schedule for them. So, yeah, they probably are getting discounted a little bit too heavily.
You know, one team that sort of gives me hope for Nebraska is if you look at what happened with Penn State from 2015 to 2016. Here out 2015, because we don't follow Penn State terribly closely because they're in the other division, but 2015, they close out with an absolute thud. They lose their last four games. They get boat raced by Michigan State, you know, 55-16 down the stretch. They're just a horrible end of the season. And you'll remember just from watching a few of the games, Hackenberg was under siege the entire time. So then you fast forward to 2016. And basically, the reason why they were in the position they were in is they start hitting big plays.
Yep.
Some of it in the run game, but also in the passing game. Do you see similarities, like if you're to have the positive outlook? Yep. Do you think there are some parallels between Penn State 2015 to Nebraska 2016 and then moving forward into the next year?
Yeah, I do think that's sort of the best case scenario that's out there for Nebraska in 2017, and it's not totally crazy. Now, I don't think Nebraska's offense needs to hit some more big plays. Like I was going through and tallying them up game by game for last year's season, and they sort of fell off a cliff after the Northwestern game, and it's just. The defense only gave up, you know, just over 20 points a game, but your offense wasn't consistent enough and wasn't hitting those plays consistently enough to make it really matter down the stretch. So I do think Nebraska might come at it a little bit the opposite way. Rather than, you know, Penn State had a new offensive coordinator last year, made a huge difference, took a couple of games. Penn State obviously started 2-2, and then reeled off a bunch of wins and ended up winning the division, winning the conference. Nebraska will have to do it, I think, by preventing those plays is probably the more likely option, but you're still going to have to pair that with a couple more of those explosive plays on the offensive side. And it's a really good example, I think, of just how much those plays matter and how much they can sort of put you in overdrive a little bit and spur some improvement, maybe even a year before you're ready. Because you look at that team now, and they kind of bring everybody back, and now the expectations are there. Wisconsin a little bit, I think, fits into this too, not in terms of how they did it, but, you know, Wisconsin was predicted to finish third in the West last year, got a big win right away, and sort of just did their thing. And in some ways, that might even be the better model for Nebraska.
You know, and I'm kind of speaking out of both sides of my mouth here, but I think we've talked about this before. But at the same time, you look at, like, when you just watch Penn State, when you watch them last year, I feel like a lot of their big plays were really lucky. Like, a disproportionate
amount. You're telling me that hitting every 50-50 ball to Godwin on a rollout pass is lucky? Okay.
But you know what I'm saying?
Against Ohio State? All right. Okay.
Yeah, right. But they were. And so you look at their cumulative numbers, and it's like, yeah, they made a lot of big plays, but good Lord. Those were really some playground. Like
they were an 8-5 team that ended up 11 wins, beating Ohio State, winning the Big Ten championship, and then they were up a 20 spot on SC and couldn't hold it. They were 8-5 that turned out 11-3.
So I just wonder how much of that is sort of like fool's gold with Penn State.
It definitely felt that way towards the end of the year in particular. You know, I remember watching those games because all of a sudden they were big games that had a national impact. And as just a neutral observer, you watch those plays unfold and how many times you hit them. And it's kind of like watching your buddy go on a run at the craps table. You're happy for him to a degree, but you're kind of like, oh man, look at this guy. You know, so I do enter this season kind of thinking, well, whatever their number was last year in terms of explosive plays, probably going to tick down just by watching, you know, a good handful of them happen. Maybe not. And I think they've got a really good offensive coordinator. And they've obviously got one of the best running backs in the country and the quarterback for their system. But there was a good deal of I guess fool's gold, as you termed it, which I think is the right term for me with Penn State in 2016.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine, talking about how rosy your projections are for Nebraska. And some good examples there with Penn State. When they got hot, they've had the talent, but they needed to put it together. And they had a first-year starting quarterback, a lot of question marks, new coordinator, and it worked out for them. And I wanted to go back, Vogues, to what you said about Nebraska's offense post-Northwestern. And I remember that game, and despite the turnovers and fumbles, it could have been closer to 40 than I think the 27 Nebraska put up.
Yeah.
That said, Nebraska also had a couple of right side of the 50 interceptions too from Thorson and Aaron Williams, big game. Really nice around that 15-yard line, a couple of picks. So Nebraska's defense came to play. With Nebraska's offensive letdown post Northwestern, do you chalk that up to the playbook that we know got shrunk down to protect the football, or do you chalk that more up to guys were just wounded, specifically the offensive line and the run game? Because the run game, while it had a good fourth quarter against Illinois, it took till the fourth quarter for it to happen. You know how much of a struggle it was against Indiana to run the ball. You know how tight the ball game was against Minnesota. I mean, it ended up being short passing game and some quarterback run. What do you think was more of the culprit? Was it the selection of plays that folks could kind of zero in on, or was it the injuries that affected the execution?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of tough to isolate those two things in particular because one definitely influences the other. Mm-hmm. But I would lean towards just getting – well, there are a couple of things. I would lean towards getting banged up. Mm-hmm. Offensively, you know, minus those first couple of games of the season, you know, Nebraska didn't have basically their starting wide receiver core together at the same time for the majority of that middle stretch. Now, you didn't notice it so much because – you had guys like Stanley or DeMornay who kind of step right in, but the numbers showed it did make a difference. So that's part of it. Another part of it is just the Big Ten's a good defensive conference, and we know that. But for teams that are dealing with the injury bug a little bit there, like if you can't hit explosive plays, it really ups, you mean, you've just got to be excellent in your execution. Nebraska wasn't quite there last year, so you're kind of missing the two key things you needed to do that can balance each other out there, I think.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Let's look at one of the opponents, week two, when it gets real, Nebraska at Oregon, and Willie Taggart is the new head coach there, obviously. You go back over his history, and his first years at programs are just, they're not very good. Now, when he took over Western Kentucky and took over South Florida, those were programs in bad shape. They were coming off, like, Western Kentucky was like 0-12 the year before he took over. And then South Florida was something like 2-10 or 3-9. So, and then he ends up, he goes 2-10 in his first year at each of those programs. So, like, that first year, they don't necessarily get better. And then year two, year three, year four, they start to get better. Do you expect that to happen again at Oregon? They're pretty downtrodden right now. Do you expect him to immediately make them better?
I do, based on what they return. You know, you look at it, it's really a advantageous situation for a coach with what's happening at Oregon right now. Because you look at all, they bring back a ton of experience. They've got one of the best running backs in the country. They seem to have their quarterback. The offense was, you know, was fine. It was kind of what Oregon had been. You just had major problems on the defense, but you've got sort of the spoke to the wheel on that side in terms of a returning freshman linebacker who was a freshman All-American. You know, in a lot of ways, when you look at the talent that Oregon returns and a record that was probably maybe a game and a half worse than it actually should have been, it's the recipe for a quick turnaround. Now, I don't think Oregon's going to jump up and contend for the Pac-12 title right away. But I think at the end of the year, we'll just sort of look at that and say, wow, look how quickly Taggart got things back on track. Because it was kind of set up for that anyway, even if he wasn't going to be the coach. So I do expect them to turn around. Nebraska, it's advantageous for the Huskers to get them right away in week two, where maybe you get them where they're still on their way up on that curve.
And then get him off the schedule until his culture and track record take hold.
Absolutely. And, you know, it'll be an interesting thing because a trip to Oregon with Mike Riley as your head coach obviously comes with some interesting storylines and a little bit of extra baggage as well. So that'll be an interesting game.
Vogues, you're going to be in Chicago, you and Jacob and – And Greg, I mean, the Hail Varsity team descends on Chi-Town here Monday, Tuesday. What are you looking forward to? What are you interested in?
You know, it's always good to sort of get there and get the season kicked off with this official, I guess, conference housewarming, for lack of a better term. I'm always going to seek out Pat Fitzgerald when I'm there. I could listen to that guy talk for quite a while. I'm interested to see the TJ Fleck phenomenon in person. He, I think, kicks off day two, which doesn't seem like a random scheduling thing. So he'll get things started with uncommon enthusiasm, to steal Harbaugh's term, right away Tuesday morning. And I'm also sort of in the bag for Jeff Brohm at Purdue. So I'm interested to see what he brings. And you know, I've never had the chance to talk to him. So I'm excited to get that opportunity.
Hey, you know, flashing back to previous Big Ten media days, can you think of a time, maybe it was last year, where you get a vibe from a certain team and that turns out to be true? You know what I mean? Like, you kind of go there and you're sort of sizing up the players and the coaches and their overall demeanor and whatever. Anything stand out to you of, hey, yeah, these guys really had this confidence that surprised me, and it turned out they were a pretty good team that year?
Yeah, you know, the one that comes to mind is probably Michigan State, from, you know, two or three years back. You know, Michigan State was kind of at the height of its run at that point, but you could just kind of tell with how they carried themselves, who they brought, that while everyone is always going to kind of assume that it's Ohio State, Michigan to start and everybody else, Michigan State played the part of, hey, we're here. We've been doing this for two, three, four seasons now. We absolutely belong. And if you don't think so, that's fine. But that's a you problem. You know, last year's was a little bit tough. I'd like to say I went to Big Ten Media Days and said, oh, well, clearly Penn State's going to win the conference and Wisconsin's going to be way better than anybody thinks. But last year was a little bit strange, you know, just with Nebraska not being there. So I can't claim to be that visionary.
Yeah. Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogels will have all the news and notes and thoughts and quotes from Chicago on Monday and Tuesday. Be sure to log on HailVarsity.com. Greg Smith, Jacob Padilla. The team will be eating deep dish and crushing football. Vogues, thanks for this morning. We will catch up with you next week. We appreciate you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Take care. There he is, Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Greg Smith, we'll get caught up with him next week. We'll dive into some of the adjustments that Coach Riley has made going into year three, and he's taken a bit from some of the Big Ten leaders, things that they do or have done. Hail Varsity Radio continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Great to be with you on a Saturday weekend edition. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranach, TJ Henning. Big thanks to Brandon Vogel, our dear friend Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse on a sabbatical. And Greg Sharp will join us. That was bad. Greg Smith. Combined the first and last name of our potential 8:30 guests. Point is it's me, Kranach, the rest of the way. So buckle up. T. Verde put a little synopsis together with his reasons for optimism, and this is well put together. So I wanted to give a couple of thoughts on this when it comes to his reasons. The last 7 years, this is his notes that he wrote in and sent us on Twitter. 7 year average for multiple schools with stats. This is per Phil Steele. Banker's defense, Kranak, 27.5 points a game in 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. Diaco, the last 2 years, his defense is 21.9 points a game and one 400 yard game. All right. A couple of 400-yard games Banker's defenses have given up. From an offensive standpoint, Riley's offenses have averaged the last 7 years 28 points a contest. So you do that quick math, the one-point difference equals about a 5-10 winning percentage the last 7 years. Riley over that span is a game over 500. But when you combine it here, the quick version is you knock down the points allowed, and you creep up to your average, or maybe you're a little better with more talent. So there's your cushion. There's 10 to 7 points better per game. They're scoring less, you're scoring more. There's your win. And you looked at the points per game on average Nebraska was scoring in Big Ten play last year, maybe a shade over 20. They're allowing around 20, so it's a wash. Every game's mm-hmm. going to be a freaking field goal game. And the projection from an optimistic standpoint is you're going to get better offensively. You're going to do better than 20 points a game in Big Ten play with this offense, with this fit. And with the Diaco D preventing big plays, keeping dudes out of the end zone, you get 3 and not 7. There is your plus factor with wins in reference to your record. And the thing that was focused on a year ago that will be focused on this year, but maybe probably not talked about as much, is your turnovers. Interceptions, fumbles, all that stuff. I mean, Nebraska really, really cut down on turnovers, and that's how you cranked out 9 wins last year with a kind of an injury-riddled, up-and-down, inconsistent offense that was really dependent on the big play. They did have their moments of, you know, killing the clock, going five-minute drives to end a ball game. But you get my point. They limited possessions, and that's how they won. Let's spend a minute here on some adjustments that I think you need to look at if you're a Nebraska fan that Coach Riley's made. They're not new talking points, but it's kind of in reference to Dick Vermeil. And the first thing he said in the interview is, I learn from everybody around me, no matter what I'm doing. If I'm a head coach, I want guys on my staff. I want assistants that are strong in some things I'm not as strong on. You want a great staff. And he's always learning, and he's always learning from people, be it in the broadcast industry when he was with ABC for all those years doing college football, or just his different runs, be it in college, JUCO, or the NFL. And Riley is a guy that is so open to learning and adapting. And I look at some of the guys he's close with, right? Two of the three guys in this Big Ten race, he is super tight with. He's close with Harbaugh, the Harbaugh family. He's extremely close with Crist. Crist worked for him. And those are two guys to kind of look at because Michigan, while not a favorite this year, The thought is they're going to get it done, and it's going to be them and Ohio State punching each other for years to come to see who goes to the playoff. Wisconsin, the model of consistency, the Nebraska model, they're physical. They know what they are, and they just stomp you. What has Nebraska done? Well, Harbaugh a year ago was kind of the – people have been going to IMG for years, right? You go to IMG to get talent, and I'm thinking more so Florida State is – it's in their backyard, so they've done that. But more and more teams outside of Florida have gone to IMG. You're getting super high-caliber athletes dialed into football as a discipline. And the work ethic, the athletic ability, the talent level they play against, you're getting a more finished college-ready product to come to your school. Harbaugh spent his first satellite camp/swarm tour a year ago camping at IMG. They took a lot of IMG kids last year in their recruiting class. Nebraska this year is doing what? Well, Buki's an IMG kid. Griffith's an IMG kid they're in on. Pledger is an IMG kid that obviously is an Oklahoma commit, but you get my point. Nebraska's kind of looking more like Michigan with the level of recruit they're going after. The IMG kind of transition of Nebraska, that's where they're going. It's something that Michigan has been doing. Nebraska's now following suit. Wisconsin, schematically, is running a 3-4, and they've done that for years. Well, Nebraska has shifted to a 3-4 because of its versatility and ability to really screw with spread offenses, right? You're going to see more and more and more of those. You're seeing less pro style, more spread style. So Nebraska has shifted to a 3-4. And the Ohio State bullet point here, what's Urban done? For years, Urban Meyer's had the next head coach on his staff as a coordinator, right? Well, Urban was one of the first coaches to go get former head coaches, and I'm thinking of Schiano here, okay? Now he has Kevin Wilson. That's on his staff. Well, Nebraska has done that by getting a former head coach, and they have Diaco. So there's three different elements here that some of the who's who of the Big Ten, teams that are predominantly the favorite either the division or to get bigger and better things done when it comes to the college football playoff. Nebraska is mirroring what they're doing. That's kind of an adjustment you've seen with year three. Nebraska has elements of Wisconsin, of Ohio State, of Michigan, either in recruiting, scheme, or assistance now on staff and in place with their program. I think that's a good thing. I don't think it's something that shouldn't be unnoticed. And maybe it'll pay off this year or in future years.
Look, yeah, you can say that for Riley. He makes changes. He's not shy to do that. He's not set in his own ways. He has completely remodeled this team. We just don't know if it's going to work out.
What's the interior and the exterior look like?
Yeah, we don't know. We know he's remodeled it. The Nebraska that it's kind of like if you have two kids. So the first kid, you think you learned kind of everything you need to know about parenting,
and then
the second one comes along,
right?
You're like,
right.
Oh my God, there is nothing transportable outside of the fact that they both pee and poop. There is nothing transportable about what I learned from parenting child one to child two. Entirely different. It's kind of same thing here. What we knew about Nebraska last year almost has zero impact or bearing on this year. It's an entirely new operation. It's completely different. Like, what from last year can you bring forward to this year outside of Drew Brown? Like, chances are the two systems that are changing and the players that are changing aren't going to affect the kicker. Okay, so like the kicker is like the only constant that you can bring from last year. You have no idea what Nebraska is going to look like with a quarterback that can throw it, supposedly. We have no idea what they're going to look like as a 3-4. Nebraska's never won the 3-4. We have to learn an entirely new language as fans. You know what I'm saying? Like, we grew up, everybody knows the 4-3. Like, we don't even necessarily know what cues to look for, what clues to look for about a 3-4, because we've only seen it, a couple times when you play Wisconsin or something like that. This season is you feel like you say it every season, though. You feel like you say it every season. Like, oh, this is going to be a really interesting season.
This is going to be but you're right. This is going to be awesome. I mean, this is each week's a new adventure because it's new and your schedule's awesome and you have a great non-con week two. I mean, and then say things get a little funky, you get a bye week and you still have a pretty impressive November to fix it if you stumble. But the point I was rambling about, forgive me, was just some of the traits Nebraska's adopted. Okay, be it the Wisconsin 3-4 scheme, be it the IMG emphasis when it comes to recruiting like Michigan, and then having a former head coach on staff as a coordinator, a la what Ohio State's done. I mean, Ohio State, Urban's got dudes just stockpiled. I mean, the first thing he did was went and got Larry Johnson, and that dude's just a killer. He was a Penn State defensive line coach forever. He goes out, you have the change with Penn State. What's he do? Boom, I'm taking Larry Johnson. And then I'm going to go get Schiano. And Schiano's secondaries have been remarkable because they're all in the NFL and they just reload first-round guy with first-round guy. And now I go get Kevin Wilson to make my dual-threat quarterback, JT, incredible in this explosive offense because you pull any coach in the Big Ten, the offense they don't want to see is Kevin Wilson in his run game with power and some no-name quarterback that doesn't have any stars chucking the ball on you. So you have Nebraska kind of adopting some traits, not afraid to look at some of their peers in their conference, make adjustments, and kind of go that route, and maybe it'll pay off.
Yeah. Hey, here's now getting sort of down into the weeds a little bit more for Nebraska this year. Because good point. Like they've done these things, but the things that you're talking about are sort of longer term, longer range. Like
the payoff's not immediate right now.
Yeah, it's not immediate. Like, cool that you got Bucky Radley Hiles. He's playing high school ball next year. Like, you know, it's not helping you. And you look specifically at like corner, with Chris Jones being gone. So Nebraska week one is going to have Arkansas State. Arkansas State was basically 3,000 passing yards, about 1,500 running yards, mm-hmm. right? So they throw it. They throw it a lot. Nebraska's got that week one. Unless they move Kalu back, and Nebraska's got a lot of options on what they're going to do in the secondary since Chris Jones left. Do you move Kalu back to corner to kind of stabilize that and then go with Aaron Williams and Kyron at safety, something like that? You know, you could do that. But if they don't move him back, you're looking at Eric Lee and Lamar Jackson as being your starting corners. Neither of those guys are proven. In fact, what little we've seen of Lamar Jackson, you're sort of like, he needs to get better. Right? Like, he just does. You know he's a good athlete, but you're just it's not like you go into this year feeling really confident that he's going to be a lockdown guy. He's got the ability, but he hasn't shown it. And then same with Eric Lee. You just don't really know. He just hasn't played. And so you're going to have two guys in this new defense at a corner spot that aren't proven at all. And you talk about preventing big plays. Well, one way you do that is with good corner play, for sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, you make tackles in space and you don't get beat deep. That's how you prevent big plays.
Yeah. You could be doing great elsewhere, but if on an island your guy's getting beat at corner, you're not preventing big plays. So Nebraska, you know, the unproven part of it is the thing that I think just causes the most concern. And so this year will literally be like learning week to week what this team even is. You sort of knew what you were going to get with Nebraska last year. You know, you had a general idea. You knew Tommy wasn't going to be completing 70% of his passes. You just knew that wasn't going to happen. And then you knew as the offensive line started going down, like all the, you know, at one point, what did you have? Like, not a single healthy offensive lineman, yet they were out on the field, right? I mean, just like guys were just in terrible shape. You know, nobody was healthy, and so you sort of knew, well, that means the run game's not going to be very good, and it was true. Like, so you knew what you were going to get with Nebraska last year. You have no idea this year. And then here's the other thing. Remember how Brandon Vogel did the article about quarterbacks and did the research about how quarterbacks sort of are what they are
early on.
And if they're freshman year or sophomore year, like whatever numbers they put in there, they basically just get like 1 or 2% better each year, right? In terms of completion percentage, like you never see a quarterback, same situation, go from like 52% all the way up to 65. Like, it just doesn't happen. They sort of are what they are. The exception being when they get an entirely new environment. Now, this would be best case scenario, but you look at what Russell Wilson was like at NC State.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson at NC State was in
six
that
and 50, six and, you know, in a pick machine.
He was 54 to 58% each year. Senior year at Wisconsin, 70.
Mm-hmm.
A ridiculous jump. Russell Wilson was still Russell Wilson, But now all of a sudden he's in an entirely new environment.
He's
not
help.
Having to throw it all the time.
he's not
got a good game. He's got a good offensive line, and it's like he was a completely different person.
Now that's
and you see what he's doing now in the NFL. Best case scenario, that's what happens with Tanner Lee too.
Mm-hmm. No, that's an amazing point, and you're right because Wilson's kind of the hopes and dreams, right? He's the guy that you switch jerseys and you switch locations and you give him some better help, better attitude, better cult, whatever. I mean, NC State's always been kind of a program that had some studs and some NFL guys, but it wasn't they weren't winning at a high level. They weren't ever 8 or 9 wins. I mean, it was a dogfight every game, and you either feast or famine it with him. But he gets to Wisconsin, you're right. And to follow your point about Wilson and the environment change, I think of a Sean Mannion. Mm-hmm. and how much he jumped, how much better he got by his senior year. So there is one group of guys that have been able to move the quarterback forward, and it's been Langsdorf, it's been Riley. It's been those two. And it is, again, you factor in Lee and what he can become with those guys because, no, for the most part, you are what you are. But there's been – you've moved the bar when you've gone to Oregon State and played for Coach Riley. There's been – not all, but quarterbacks tend to get better, not worse, or stay the same. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. A quick timeout, and we'll be back to wind down a Saturday. It's Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
To rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranick.
One final time on the weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio. You miss any part of this week or this weekend's extravaganza, can log on hailvarsity.com. The podcast, the ESPN Lincoln app also links you to the podcast, and then iTunes there for you. And if you're doing a playlist, why not try a podcast and take us with you on your terms, on your time. Kranak, the weekend plans are what? What's on the agenda for you?
So I don't have to figure it out, man. I don't have anything in particular. It's going to be chill time. Hey, but you know what else I'm going to do? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to look a little bit more into this Willie Taggart character. Did you know, from what I could gather, did you know this, that he replaced Tommy Frazier at Manatee High School?
No.
Did you know that?
He's the quarterback that followed T. Frazier.
He's the quarterback that followed Tommy Frazier at Manatee. And he won a couple of state titles, too. So that's pretty interesting.
That's nice.
That there's that connection there. You wonder if Tommy, like, mentored him or something. That's kind of random. I don't know. Just going to look some of that up. I got a new truck, Schmidt. I got a new truck.
Really?
So I'm probably going to just drive that thing.
What are we driving? What did you get?
I got a Colorado.
Really?
I got a Colorado. I don't like the Buffs. It has nothing to do with that.
Is there a Ram?
No.
The Cal? Do we buy? Are we leasing? Is it pre-owned?
We're buying. No, it's new.
What'd you get rid of?
Well, the hail damage. Did you guys get any hail damage in Lincoln? We got just besieged. You know, I got to get a new roof. The car got totaled. Like, we had like tennis ball size hail a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I remember that. Were you one of the folks that backed out of the garage to get the hail claim?
Well, just happened to be at Target as the storm blew through. And so it just got just destroyed.
I had people in my apartment complex like pull out of the garage so they could get the claims.
I don't understand that entire scam.
I should see what they're driving.
Because my car got hail on it, but if you just physically look at it, you maybe notice like 2 dents on the hood.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Owned the car outright. It blew books for like $5,500, something like that.
Right.
You know. And these fools, the insurance companies, gives me $8,500 for it.
Right. High five.
I'm like, why are you guys doing that? Like, I don't even want to know. Just, okay,
thank
I'm going to take that money. Give me that money. So they're going to tow it away later.
What color of Colorado did you get?
Oh, the cyber metallic gray.
Pretty awesome.
Some people would just call that dark gray, but when you're fresh off the dealership, you call that the proper title.
You still have the the Christmas or the air freshener hanging in the front of the rear view?
No, I don't have anything. See, I mean, it's brand new. I just got it last night.
I know, but I mean, every car I've been in with you has a little green or vanilla air freshener.
I didn't realize that. I don't change them out enough. So at some point, they're just like hanging pieces of cardboard that no longer serve any purpose. You know,
take a picture and take a picture and tweet it out.
Wow, no. But I'm going to go drive that thing.
I'm Mark Kranak.
My 4-year-old son thinks I'm the man. Now,
and I have a Colorado, and you don't. I like it. Wonderful. We'll get you cranked up for media days on Monday. Kranak, take care, buddy.
You too, sir.
All right, Teach, thanks a lot. Back at you on Monday with Hail Varsity.